the green grass grows.
This Saturday morning here at Rosie on the House, we're joined by Julie Murphy of the Arizona Farm Bureau, who's brought in the new president, Stephanie Smallhouse, who's brought the entire family in. They're on their way from their ranch just outside of Tucson on the way up to Payson. They stopped in here for the broadcast to cut. They're going to cut down a Christmas tree and go home and get their Christmas tree decorated this weekend. And before we get to the roles and responsibilities of the president, what does that mean and what role does that job what's the demand of that? We've got John online at 602-277-5827, who wants to talk to John Jay about a pine tree he's having troubles with. If you'd like to join the conversation, our 800 number, I did not get it forwarded correctly. It's so you got to use the local 602-277-5827. John and Mesa, go ahead with your question, sir.
Good morning. I bought a pine tree about 30 years ago. It was a lipo pine tree, Christmas tree. I planted it, and the thing is huge. It's probably 40 feet tall. Well, I've been having problems. I called in a couple months ago. It was starting to turn brown on the bottoms, limbs. So I trimmed them off. We talked about a watering situation. I readjusted that. And now the bottom limbs are dying again. The top is, I wouldn't say it's the greatest, but it's a little bit brown, but it's not like the bottom. And I'm wondering what I should do, if I can get somebody to look at that, or what should I do with the thing?
Well, there's been a number of issues, and I went back. There's been a lot of publicity about issues with pine trees here in the valley, particularly in the last few years, and it really isn't new. I went back and looked at some of the cooperative extension bulletins from the 70s and 80s, and we called it Aleppo pine blight back then, I think, because we didn't know what it was, and I'm not sure we still do. But a lot of it is just environmental. Aleppo pines come from, you know, a part of the world that get winter moisture, and they seem to prefer and do better on winter moisture than they do with summer moisture. And we haven't had a lot of, even though we've had good monsoon rains, our winter moisture has not been great the last 5, 6 years or 10 years.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the issues, is it might be an environmental problem that you really can't do anything about. So what you want to make sure, pines like really good drainage. I would get a lot of gypsum or sulfur, you know, and try and see if we can't make sure that soil is staying opened up, that we're getting good drainage. When you water it, especially this time of year, water it a long, long time. And with a mature tree like that, I'm talking 10, 12, overnight, 24 hours, a very long, deep, slow soaking, kind of like you would get with one of these winter, light, drizzly, long-lasting rains. And then it probably right now could go 3 weeks to a month before it gets watered again. So try sulfur or gypsum, long, deep, slow soakings, letting it dry out in between. I wouldn't do any more pruning, especially this time of year, and kind of see what happens this spring.
Are we going to get some rain? These clouds have been teasing us for a week. Yeah. It was a little chilly this morning, so I don't know if it's finally blowing in some moisture with them.
We're about due.
We are due. It is, even it was last week, we were at 83 days or something like that without.
I think it's the first October without measurable rain ever or something like that. So
wow.
It's
time.
Been pretty dry. After a pretty wet summer, it's been pretty dry.
Stephanie, what made you want to run for the Farm Bureau? Or was it like a lot of those things, you were forced into it?
I was voluntold.
Voluntold, yes.
Actually, I did start out that way. Andy told me I needed to do it. But Andy and I have been married for about how many years? 18 years. And when we first got married, my background is in wildlife biology, and so I was a wildlife biologist for the Bureau of Land Management. But I have a natural resource background, and when we first got married, Andy was first starting to transition, taking over the ranch for his dad, and his dad died suddenly, and so at that point, he had been involved in some Farm Bureau activities and things, and being involved in policy, and decided, you know, you can't run a ranch and do that at the same time. And so I said, well, I'm not very good at public speaking, but I'll give it a try. And so I started volunteering at the local county level, because Farm Bureau is very much a grassroots organization. Everything comes up from the county level, then to the state and the national level. And because we're
is there an active chapter in each of Arizona's 13 counties?
Almost. We have Santa Cruz is the only county that doesn't have an active. They combine with Pima.
Okay.
But other than that, every county does. And so started volunteering at the county level. On the San Pedro River, we're in an ecologically important area to a lot of people. And so we are under the microscope a lot with what we do with our farm and ranch. And so I've been very involved since that time. Now, what takes me to the point I am now is the fact that the passion that I have and the love that I have for the people in this industry, you know, it starts out for my own family. You know, when you can go out your front door and you can see corrals that were built five generations ago, that's not something you want to see go away. You want to maintain the work of those generations. Well, that's the way a lot of farm families are around Arizona and the nation. And so a lot of people think it's corny, but, you know, really where it comes from inside of me is the fact that I'm passionate about agriculture because I truly see it as a food security issue. I truly see agriculture as a pillar of the nation's security. And a lot of times, you know, you have your foodies and you have your folks that are just trying to get by. But at the end of the day, whether you can afford the high-end ag products or you're just trying to get by, it's still a security issue. We still have to be able to maintain that supply. And the hardworking families that do that are the reason that I do this.
And just before I'm going to correct myself, there's 15 counties in Arizona. I think I said 13. But so they all have their own Farm Bureau, which is interesting because a lot of these areas you don't really think of as what you would call agricultural environments.
Sure.
If you've ever driven from Phoenix to L.A., on 10.
I try not to.
Me neither. But there's a from you know, basically Tonopah area to Quartzsite. There's not a lot of desired, it's just miles of creosotes.
Yeah, we have over, I think it's over 20 million acres in some kind of food production in Arizona, whether that's rangeland grazing or whether it's a commercial crop like in Yuma. But, you know, the southwest part of the state is very much so producing vegetables, leafy greens, specialty crops, and then things like wheat, those types of crops. Southeast part of your state is heavy into corn and other grains and alfalfa cropping areas. And then much more of the state is grazing. And that's the thing that's really valuable about animal proteins and about beef protein is that you can get that protein off of areas that can't be farmed. And so we have a lot of ranching in Arizona. Beef is our second highest contributor to the ag economy. So,
and y'all are responsible for 800 head of that beef. How many head total in the state? Any guesstimations on that?
You know, the USDA comes out with those numbers, but I don't have them in my head, and it's pretty significant. It does fluctuate for a number of reasons, because if you're, and both Andy and Stephanie will correct me on this, but if you're grazing on public and federal lands, the USDA sometimes dictates to how much cattle you can graze based on water availability and stuff like that, correct?
Yeah, if you're leasing, leasing property, it's not private property, whether it's from the feds or the state, they dictate grazing capacity is for that land, and so that's what we go by and what most ranchers do.
What type of cattle do y'all? Are they Hereford? Are they Angus? What? Or do you have a mix?
I'm gonna let my husband answer this. Since he's the expert. He does the work. So
yeah, it's mainly Angus Hereford cross. We've got the majority, probably 3/4 Angus and a quarter Hereford crossed in, and we sell ours on the Superior Video auction, mainly that goes out satellite on RFDTV, and we do a lot of different programs. There's a lot of it's exciting times for the cattle industry. We're actually, people don't realize either that, you know, they think, oh, you just get out there and move the cattle and do all this stuff. Well, we're talking about GPS chips in there. We put chips in all our cattle that leave our place. They can source them back to where they came from because of Mad Cow and all that. We do, ours are certified natural, certified Angus. They're GAP certified. We do all these certifications that helps us get more money for our cattle. And in the future, I think we're starting to now DNA test our cattle. So to know what the feed conversion is in those cattle, you know, how and the carcass merits, you know, the marbling and the ribeye area and all that. So it's actually really exciting times for, and it's not just getting out on a horse. I mean, there's still that because you got to round them up. I mean, don't get me wrong, but a lot of it is, there's a lot of technology involved, believe it or not, in what we're doing.
So is it fair for me to say that you can grow for Whole Foods? You guys can grow for just about any market because of how you are tracking the quality of your beef.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we're certified to go to China or Whole Foods or, and, you know, pretty much anywhere because of the programs that we've put, certifications we've put on our animals and our beef.
So some of that's not just tracking. Some of it's also animal welfare. We have a certain certification for the way that we treat our animals. That's the beef that goes to Whole Foods.
Talk to me about the satellite auction. I'm very interested. RFD-TV, if you're not familiar with it, it's on, well, what channel is that? Do you know?
On Dish, it's like 132 or 232, I think it is. Yeah, 232, 231. There's two channels there.
I can turn it on, watch the auction. Can I, as a homeowner, consumer, bid on these?
Yeah. You would sign up as a bidder, and you can get on the internet too and bid on them on the internet.
If you want to buy 50,000 pounds,
yeah, you have to buy.
How big is your freezer?
It's by the truckload, so that's the thing. Yeah, that's the key. By the
your neighbor. Your neighbors might not be real happy. Stock truck showed up with.
You may not be zoned for that.
And our Arizona beef is so good that you would want to buy it by the truckload, but you have to be reasonable. So that's why we can get some really good quality beef in our local grocery stores.
I was fishing for a source. We have two beef cows that we raise right now. One's just about ready for harvest, and the other one, you know, we try and time it so we never are out of our own beef. And we're always looking for good locations to, you know, find. And we've tried a few different types of breeds and have fun with it. So
any form you want.
So this is after market. This is ready. This is packaged meat on the auction, or is this the live animal?
This is the live animal. Okay. We don't sell packaged meat. We've tried to do that for years, and it's just it's a lot of labor and a lot of upfront cost to build a market direct to the public, and it's a complicated thing, which
the butcher at Bash's needs a job too, right?
Yeah.
Well, and what a lot of people don't realize is if you go to a high end restaurant and they say, oh, we've sourced this beef locally from this ranch. Well, logistically for the ranch, it's difficult unless you're in a co-op situation with a lot of ranchers because those high-end restaurants just want high-end cuts. So then what do you do with all of the hamburger? What do you do with all the roasts? What do you do with all the offals? And so that's why some ranchers choose, and most ranchers choose, to sell their beef commercially by the truckload to, you know, obviously other businesses that can handle that, because it's logistically, it's very difficult to find a market for every part of that animal when you're doing it animal by animal.
And if we're getting hungry for beef, just remember you can actually source directly on fillyourplate.org. But 53% of our beef sold in the meat case in any local grocery store here in Arizona is coming from farmers and ranchers like the small houses.